from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm Lily Jamali. Tensions between the U.S. and Iran are mounting after last week's airstrike ordered by President Trump that killed a top Iranian general in Iraq. Those tensions are felt deeply here in California, where more Iranians live than anywhere outside of Iran itself, many of them in Los Angeles. KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb reports they're divided on what should come next.
Mina Ahmadi says she is elated that Qasem Soleimani, the former commander of an elite Iranian military unit, was killed by the United States.
He was like an evil.
Like many walking the streets of West LA this week, Ahmadi has her mind on what's happening in the Middle East. She moved to the U.S. from Iran more than two decades ago, and she hopes this military escalation will spell the beginning of the end for the Iranian regime.
And when I saw that body, you know, because on the news, and I said, you know, if you're believing the karma, it's happened to you.
But LA's Iranian-American community is not a monolith. Not everyone is celebrating Soleimani's death. Arya Safar's parents fled government persecution in Iran several decades ago. And he says the events of the last few days have him on edge.
I'm just afraid of what the United States government could do if they began targeting Iranian Americans.
That concern coincides with reports of Iranian Americans and permanent residents being held at U.S. ports of entry over the weekend for extended questioning. The National Iranian American Council says that is discriminatory and illegal. However, U.S. Customs and Border Protection, or CBP, in a statement says those reports are false. For the California Report, I'm Benjamin Gottlieb in Los Angeles.
Let's go to Sacramento now, where state lawmakers get back to work today for the 2020 legislative session. KQED's politics editor Scott Schaefer says it should be a fast start to the year.
The focus in 2020 may be the presidential election, but there are plenty of statewide issues that need attention, too. As always, the lack of affordable housing continues to be a focus of attention in Sacramento. Last year, a bill to encourage the construction of denser housing, especially near transit hubs, stalled in committee. That bill, SB 50, will come up again this month. Its author, State Senator Scott Wiener from San Francisco, will unveil changes tomorrow to address the concerns of opponents who say it takes away local control of development. Also high on the legislature's list, what to do about PG&E after the bankrupt utility unleashed weeks of forced power outages last fall. Then there's following up on the new law aimed at so-called gig workers like Uber and Lyft drivers. And perhaps most important, Governor Gavin Newsom will release his new state budget by the end of the week, spelling out his priorities on a wide range of issues. For the California Report, I'm Scott Schaefer.
And as lawmakers reconvene, Capital Public Radio's Ben Adler took a moment to dig into his reporter's notebook to reflect on our polarized political debate. He brings us this final piece in our California Dream collaboration on solutions.
In the spring of 2017, when Democratic Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon shelved a single-payer health care bill.
It cost double the state budget and didn't have a funding source attached to it. It was a bill that was woefully incomplete.
The California Nurses Association posted a violent graphic to social media, a knife with the word Rendon on it, stabbing the California grizzly bear in the back. The union's Don Nielsen defended the image.
I think it represents very well what the speaker did. Yeah, he stabbed California residents in the back.
Weeks later, Governor Jerry Brown crossed party lines to negotiate a cap-and-trade deal with a bloc of Republicans. Assembly Minority Leader Chad Mays acknowledged the political risk.
What they decided was that they were going to put the people of California ahead of their own careers.
And it sure was. Influential conservatives like John Fleischman forced Mays to resign his leadership post.
Most hard-working Republican activists expect our legislators to draw a line in the sand.
Despite these pressures, some lawmakers still seek connections, compromise, and karaoke. Once a year, the legislature's cordial caucus convenes for a karaoke night with drinks and some below-average singing. Democratic State Senator Stephen Bradford told me it makes finding common ground a lot easier.
Events like this allow us to sit down outside of the party, outside the building, outside the politics, and get to know one another.
And former GOP Senator Tony Strickland said politicians do know how to disagree without being disagreeable.
If you really want stability, you need to hear what the other side's talking about and have some respect.
But your constituents, your active ones, are pressuring you to go further in one direction or another.
Without question. That's why it's incumbent upon leaders to lead.
Sometimes they do. Earlier this year, Governor Gavin Newsom and lawmakers from both parties resolved one of the nation's most polarizing debates with a compromise.
392 is now law in the state of California.
Assembly Bill 392 raised the legal standard for when police can use deadly force. After months of negotiations, the final deal drew bipartisan support. Here's its author, Democratic Assemblywoman Shirley Weber.
They always say if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together.
And here's Republican Assemblyman Tom Lackey.
When you have true leadership, really polarized positions can come together.
But it's not just politicians who must choose between tolerance and tantrums. It's the rest of us, too. It can be hard to find tolerance of the other side, even perhaps from ourselves. Yet every once in a while, there's a moment like this one, outside a Trump speech in Reno in August 2017.
Kevin, you're wearing a Make America Great Again hat?
Actually, this is signed by President Trump and his son.
And Kathy, you're holding a Black Lives Matter sign?
That's right. Made this in my backyard last night.
As police held protesters and supporters apart, there were Kevin Coffey and Kathy Blaine just talking with each other.
A little anger at first, a little bit, and now I kind of feel like he's a friend.
Love and respect your neighbor and understand that some people don't agree with what you want.
In my 20 years as a journalist, I've only felt comfortable advocating for two things. Donate to your local public radio station and vote. But as I turn in my reporting gear, I think I'm ready to add one final thing to that list. Just because you disagree with someone's political views, that doesn't make them a bad person. For the California Report, I'm Ben Adler in Sacramento.
Well, if you're an independent voter, aka no party preference, listen up. You might run into some problems voting for your favorite candidate in the upcoming presidential primary in a few weeks. That's according to an LA Times opinion piece co-authored by Loyola Law School professor Jessica Levinson. She joins me now from Los Angeles. Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad you're here. So what is it about the way that our state handles independent voters that's creating this potential problem in the presidential primary?
So the problem is really created not by our state, but by the fact that the national parties are the ones to determine who gets to opt in and maybe cross over and vote in the party primaries. And so what the national parties have said is, if you're in the Republican primary, it's closed. So if you're a no party preference voter, you can't ask for a ballot to basically jump in or cross over and try and choose the Republican nominee. If you're in the Democratic Party, they do allow for an open system where no party preference voters in California can decide to opt in. So it's really this weird kind of interaction between our state law and the federal understanding that allows for the national parties to determine who gets to vote in presidential primaries.
So from what you're telling me, it sounds like the Democratic Party is open to no party preference voters weighing in. So if I do fall in that category, I'm a nonpartisan voter, is it too late now for me to take action so that my vote counts?
No, it's not too late. So the people that we're particularly worried about are the no party preference voters who want to vote by mail. Check your kitchen counter. You should have a postcard from your county registrar, and it will say, if you would like a presidential ballot with a presidential candidate, please return this postcard. And it will say that you can ask for a presidential ballot with Democratic candidates, Libertarian candidates, or American Independent candidates. Those are the three parties that have opened up their primaries for no party preference voters. Even if that postcard says send it in by December 20th or send it in by December 31st, you can still send it in. County registrars will still absolutely do their best to process it, but please don't think that this now means you don't get to weigh in on the presidential election. You can also just walk into a polling place if you have the time and if you have the ability and say, I'm a no party preference voter. I typically vote by mail, and your poll worker will walk you through the process.
So that is the fail-safe here. If nothing else, go vote in person, and that's your way as a nonpartisan voter to get around this issue. How many nonpartisan voters are out there in California? I mean, is this enough to influence who ends up as the Democratic Party's nominee for president?
It actually is. So no party preference voters are actually the second biggest block of voters in California. after Democrats. There are more no party preference voters in California than there are Republican voters. And so if you think about the kind of Venn diagram of overlapping people, one, the no party preference voters, two, those who want to vote by mail, we're talking about millions of people. And so far, there are kind of unofficial statistics are that very few of these no party preference voters have actually returned their postcards to the county registrar, maybe less than 5%. And so when you're looking at a really competitive presidential primary, it is potentially a game changer. There are enough people here who are affected and enough delegates up for grabs that it could be.
All right. Jessica Levinson, professor at Loyola Law School. Thank you.
Thank you.
Support for the California Report comes from Hint Water. Hint is water infused with fruit essences, including watermelon and blackberry. No sugar, no sweeteners, no calories. Available in grocery stores, Hint, mouthwatering water. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.
And that's the California Report. I'm Lily Jamali.